I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday afternoon. Thomas Frank, in a day after the election article in The Guardian, which is titled, Donald Trump is moving to the White House and liberals put him there. Thomas asked the question, what the hell went wrong? Why, oh, why did it have to be Hillary Clinton, he writes, exactly the wrong candidate for this angry populist movement, an insider when the country was screaming for an outsider, a technocrat who offered fine-tuning when the country wanted to take a sledgehammer to the machine. In a piece in March, actually, long before this election, he said that this really was Elizabeth Warren's time to run, and she's the one, he said, who should be up there running. If she had run, she would be crushing it in the polls. We're going to be looking at this election and at the nomination of Hillary Clinton and the future of the Democratic Party. Thomas Frank has been with us before here on this particular program for his latest book, which is Listen, Liberal, or Whatever Happened to the Party of the People. He's also author of What's the Matter with Kansas. He's a political analyst, a historian, a journalist, a columnist for Harper's Magazine. He also was a columnist for the Wall Street Journal. He was with us back in June to talk about the book Listen, Liberal, and you can go to our archives to hear that. So we have a lot to talk about this hour, and he'll say some things that will, I'm sure, get you wanting to call in and expressing your thoughts. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Please leave your messages for us there. And we are on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Thomas Frank, hello. Thanks for being with us again. I'm fine. How are you?
Well, I'm fine as well.
Good.
So we're all fine.
So
the, I'm sorry about the phone problems. You'd think, you know, a landline, everything would work, would be hunky-dory, and of course, it ain't.
I'm sorry, but it sounds okay now. Are you out? Yeah, well.
Everything's fine now.
Yeah, good. We can hear you. All right, Donald Trump, you write in the piece in The Guardian, needlessly offended countless groups of people, women, Hispanics, Muslims, disabled people, mothers of crying babies, the Bush family, George Will-style conservatives. He even lost Glenn Beck for Pete's sake, and now he is going to be president of the United States. What the hell went wrong, you ask? What went wrong?
Clintonism went wrong. You know, there's many different things that went wrong, but you know, you keep coming back to this philosophy that has guided the Democratic Party for such a long time. I mean, how do you lose to a guy like Donald Trump? This is the worst, as you just said, the worst. You know, you pointed out reading from my article, the worst candidate of all time. How do you lose to a guy like this? Well, you do it by running a technocrat, a passionless technocrat, in a year when people are demanding, you know, people are desperate for some kind of change, and they have been desperate for quite a while, you know, as we saw in 2008. And you take groups for granted, that helps, you know, that helps you to lose an election. Take working class voters for granted, you know, they've been voting for Democrats for a long time. You don't have to give them anything, by the way, which is the philosophy of Clintonism. They've got nowhere else to go. This was the line they repeated so many times back when they were passing NAFTA back in the 1990s. Those groups have nowhere else to go, so you could treat them however you wanted to, with impunity. Well, they found somewhere else to go.
Yes, they did. They found somewhere else to go. Let me talk a little bit with you more about Hillary Clinton. What was it that you talk about the fact that winning really should have been the party's number one concern, and that somehow they instead looked at it was time for her. It was her due. It was time for her to reach the top.
Her turn.
It was her turn. So why was the focus on her turn instead of on winning the election? Or did a lot of Democrats really think that she could win this election?
Oh, they assumed she could. Of course, every poll had her in the lead. I myself thought she was. I mean, you know, because I read the newspapers as well. She had every newspaper endorsement in America. It was unprecedented. I've never seen anything like it. Not to mention, you know, newspapers like the New York Times. You know, they ran in. Well, we don't want to get into media bias here or anything like that. But everything was in her favor. Everyone assumed that she would win it without having to even break a sweat. And she lost. The, you know, I wrote an article back in May of this year saying, well, it wasn't an article, it was an interview with me, and the headline was, Thomas Frank says Hillary needs to woo working class whites. And she didn't even try. You know, it would, like, they didn't think that was necessary. She didn't really need to woo anybody. You know, she just needed to get out there and wave the Democratic flag, and she would win. That was sort of the attitude. They, you know, if the Democratic Party, and remember, this was sort of a coronation. They chose her to be the candidate. There's a reason that there were 17 Republicans running and only 3 Democrats. They chose Hillary Clinton from the beginning. You know, and the other two people running basically were out there because they didn't get the memo, you know. But this is who they wanted to represent them, and it was, you know, the people within the Democratic Party and their sort of cheerleaders in the media were absolutely head over heels for Hillary Clinton. They thought she was the greatest candidate of all time. But no, she didn't have to promise anything to anybody. I thought she would win automatically. If you were serious about challenging Donald Trump and really beating him badly, you would have done something about the white working class votes. Everybody could see this coming. Everybody was writing stories about white working class people showing up at Trump rallies. You know, and by the way, these are traditionally Democratic voters. The white working class. This is Harry Truman's group. This is Hubert Humphrey's group. You know, these people are what used to be what the Democratic Party used to be all about. It's very easy for the Democratic Party to appeal to them.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't even try this time.
Well, they had this guy, and tell me how this figures in. You talk about the offensive, incredibly offensive comments that he made about women, for heaven's sake.
Trump,
and women,
yeah.
Over half of white women voted for him, which we'll talk about later. Hispanics, Muslims, disabled people, mothers of crying babies, the Bush family, John McCain, all of these people. Didn't Democrats figure in, and perhaps rightfully so, that he couldn't win because of what he said, how he offended so many people in this country?
Yes, they did figure that, but it turned out it was wrongfully so. You know, they just assumed it. They took it for granted. You know, they didn't really try. And then, you know, all of these scandals cascaded down on Hillary. And by the way, this is something that the Democratic Party, you know, everybody could see that coming. I mean, Bernie Sanders declined to talk about Hillary Clinton's emails in the primaries, you know, probably a mistake on his part. But everybody knew that issue was there from the beginning. The Clinton Foundation stuff that was so sketchy, that had been reported in newspapers a long time ago. This stuff was all out there. Democrats chose her anyway. You take a guy like Sanders, who, by the way, would have appealed to working class white voters. I mean, that's really where his heart is. That's what he's all about. And he's relatively scandal free. But that's not what they wanted. You know, they went with their heart. In a strange way, Hillary represents a certain kind of Democratic Party idealism. Can I just take a step back here and
tell
you about what I've been working on all year?
Sure.
So I wrote a book about the Democratic, where all this comes from. The reason you have me on the show is I wrote a book about the Democratic Party and how it's changed over the years. It's called Listen, Liberal.
Right.
That's the title of the book, and it's how they stopped being the party of working class people, how they turned their backs on working class people, and it's been a long process. You know, it began in the 1970s, and it has slowly gained force over the years. But instead of that, they are a class party. They're a party that speaks to a certain social class, and that class is the professional class. Your sort of affluent, white-collar people in the suburbs, people with advanced degrees, the sort of top 10% of the income distribution. And Hillary, those people really like Hillary Clinton. They see in her, they see a reflection of themselves. And she really did speak to that class, that social class's way of looking at the world, their dreams, their hopes, their aspirations. You know, her whole campaign was about meritocracy, about how the talented have to be able to rise to the top of their talents, that they there should be no discrimination against people on anything other than their ability, and that is a very meritocratic, that is a professional class message. I mean, it's also a basic democratic message. You know, that's something that goes back to the American Revolution, but that's not a message for working people who have seen their way of life be destroyed in the last 10 years.
And you do have to be really out of touch with the economic angst that many people are feeling in this country. Many, many people. We've done talk shows for years about that. We hear that. A lot of people heard that. You have to not be paying close attention to that, to very closely before the time that you're going to run for president, giving speeches to Goldman Sachs and getting $270,000 or whatever the figure
so
was. It's huge.
That. It's so much. It goes so much farther than that. I mean, they were saying America is already great. The New York Times is running these editorials saying, how could people be so stupid that they don't know the economy is booming? Do they not look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average? You know, there are many, many, many stories in this genre. Can I just tell you, I wrote a book 12 years ago called What's the Matter with Kansas, where I visited all of these. I'm from Kansas originally. And I visited all of these small towns around the state, and these places are a disaster zone. And I just got back from a visit to small town Missouri just the other day. And Missouri has always been, in my lifetime, a very Democratic state. This is where Harry Truman is from, Dick Gephardt, that kind of people. But nowadays, the Democrats only carry the two big cities in the college town, like in so many places. That's all they've got. Everywhere else went for Trump. And you go to these other places, and these places are a disaster zone. I mean, these are small towns that are destroyed by the demise of the family farm. All the kids leave as soon as they graduate from high school. The towns are aging. The shops are all boarded up, of course, because Walmart did a number on them years ago. The agricultural monopolies are driving their way of life down. Everybody there knows it. And you go to these people and you say, "Make America great again," even if you don't have any specifics. Or then you take the other candidate who's saying, "There's no problems in America. Everything's great. We're doing so well. The creative class in the big cities is doing so great, bike paths, arts districts." Come on. I mean, this is at some point that the cluelessness of these Democrats is so overwhelming. And it's also the irony of it that these are Democrats missing out on their own, the people that used to be the heart and soul of their party, and they can't even see what's happening to them.
You write in your piece in The Guardian, Thomas, what happened is a disaster both for liberalism and for the world. Talk more about what you mean.
Well, for the world, Donald Trump is president. This man doesn't know anything about governing, as we're going to discover. He doesn't know how foreign policy works. He thinks that you just talk tough and everybody will snap into place. Like in the old days, it's going to be a disaster for the world. But you look at what just happened to the Democratic Party, by the way, and I can tell you stories all afternoon if you want about how complacent. I live in D.C. here now, how complacent these people are, about how they believed before this that they're going to win every presidential election from here till doomsday.
Right. Yes, they did.
Because the changing demographics of America, mm-hmm. And you look at it. Look at the situation we're in now. If you're a Democrat, which I am. They've lost all three branches of government. Trump took the White House, the Republicans control Congress, and Trump immediately gets to name a member of the Supreme Court. You look at the state legislatures of America, they have never had, in my lifetime, they have never had such, the Republicans have never had such a grip on the state legislatures of this country and the governorships. This is unprecedented in my lifetime, the disaster that these people have brought down on the Democratic Party. And these, by the way, to get back to a question that you brought up earlier, these are the centrists. These are the ones that told us that they were good at winning elections. We on the left of the party had to put up with them because we had nowhere else to go. And they promised, they're going to do all these things that we can't stand. They're going to get NAFTA passed. They're going to deregulate the banks. They're going to get welfare reform done. All of these terrible things that they have done. The Iraq War, they signed on to that. Bailing out Wall Street, they signed on to that. You go down the list, all the things that they've done that are so disastrous. But we were told to keep our mouths shut and sit down in our seats because they would win elections. They were the electable ones. And now look at what has happened. It has never been this bad for the Democrats in my lifetime. And this is the pragmatic wing of the party brought this to us. The electable wing of the party did this to us.
Was this Elizabeth Warren's year, and why didn't she run, do you know?
Well, I often say that. It was Elizabeth Warren's year. I have no idea why she didn't run. I think the mood of the country was totally ready for a politician like Elizabeth Warren or a politician like Bernie Sanders. Or to be honest with you, Joe Biden would have, I think, wipe the floor with Donald Trump. Joe Biden has a very blue-collar streak to him, you know. And none of the, you know, Elizabeth Warren didn't choose to run. Bernie got, as we all know, lost in the primaries. And President Obama talked Biden out of throwing his hat into the ring. The Democratic Party really wanted Hillary to be the candidate. The sort of, you know, you saw how every Democratic office holder in America rallied around her. She was, it was her turn. She was the chosen candidate from the very beginning. And she led us into disaster.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised by the turnout? You voted for her, right? You said
yes,
back in March.
Yes, I did, of course. You know, of course. Of course I was surprised that she lost. You know, I was not surprised that there's no enthusiasm for her. We knew that from the get-go, that there was going to be very little enthusiasm for her. She's not an inspiring person. She's not an inspiring candidate, except for some people. You know, I said that, but I take it back. The New York Times op-ed page were so enthusiastic for this woman. Washington Post, same. It's funny that people in certain reaches of what I would call gatekeeper journalism thought she was the greatest candidate ever. And I think that's just a matter of simple class identification. You know, they saw she's one of their own. She sees the world like they do. You know, they go to these Clinton Foundation gatherings, and they believe she's very inspiring. And so you had this candidate who was one of the most unpopular presidential candidates of all time. But she did have this, there's this one little sliver of the population for whom she was, you know, very inspiring, and those happen to be the people who control the megaphone in this country. I mean, I shouldn't laugh, but it is ironic.
What's interesting is we kept hearing, too, that this is the Latino wave. This is the wave when minorities, because we will, in the not-too-distant future, become a majority-minority country. But if you look at the numbers, and I was particularly interested in the female vote, 94% of African-American women voted for her, 68% of Latino voted for her, 53% of white female voters in the country voted for Donald Trump. But the drop-off in vote, particularly among African-Americans, I think she lost the election. People keep saying Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, actually, if there had been not even a huge number of more people in minority communities to turn out, but 140,000 or 150,000, this election would have gone another way, which cites to what you said, that even in minority communities, a lot of people stayed home.
Absolutely. That is totally correct. But this is the wages of complacency. This is what happens when you run a candidate who's really uninspiring, and who, by the way, that nobody really trusted. You know, you look at Hillary's, what she was promising, and they were good things. You know, on paper, I really agreed with what she was selling. I thought that they were, there were a lot of wonderful things on the menu, you know, that she was offering. So nobody believed she would actually do them. Like, for example, all her talk about the trade deals, you know, and that was really the issue of the year. That was the issue that really killed the Democrats this year. Well, she said she agreed with Trump on NAFTA and on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but nobody believed her. It was her husband that got NAFTA done in the first place, and he was so proud of it back then, you know. And this is, and also she's the one that helped to negotiate the Trans-Pacific Partnership. She had been Secretary of State. Now, it didn't help that here's Barack Obama back in Washington the whole time all this is happening, saying he's still going to try to get the Trans-Pacific Partnership done. You know, that was not helping. And by the way, neither was the premium hikes in Obamacare right at the last minute. I still don't understand how they let that happen right before an election. These people just don't. Sometimes they just don't play the game in the right way, you know. But there was very little enthusiasm for Hillary among the communities that you just described.
And all those people who did vote for Donald Trump, what do you think, Thomas, in their heart of hearts, they really do believe he will do for them to make their lives better? And what does he need to do to make their lives better?
Well, we've all embarked on that experiment now, whether we want to or not, and I think that's unfortunate for the country and unfortunate for the world. We're all going to find out. I think that a lot of the vote for Trump was a vote of desperation, you know, a cry for help. I think that in a lot of ways it's similar to what happened in 2008, only instead of hope you have desperation. Mm. You know, you know, I'm very sorry I'm in this kind of reflective, historically minded mood, but
it's
I was one of the people that was very enthusiastic about Barack Obama in 2008, and it's funny that we're facing so many of the same problems that they didn't really go away. You know, the inequality is worse than ever. A lot of working class people are looking at their lives coming out of the Great Recession and saying, you know, what happened to us then is now permanent, that there is no help coming from anyone, and it is a kind of desperation. It's like a giving up on hope, you know, that they would put their country in the hands of someone like Donald Trump, who I can guarantee you a lot of these people find him tremendously objectionable in a moral sense.
Yes.
I think of my people back in Kansas. These are church-going people. These are very religious people, voted for Trump. And you think about what they must feel when they heard that tape of him talking about women. I mean, it's deeply offensive. It's repugnant, and they voted for him anyways. Now, that's not because they're hypocrites, although maybe they are. But that's not because they're hypocrites. I mean, on the surface, it's because their desperation overrules that, I think.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Thomas Frank is our guest, political analyst, historian, journalist. His latest book is Listen, Liberal, or Whatever Happened to the Party of the People. He's also author of What's the Matter with Kansas? He wrote a piece that appeared in The Guardian that examined what happened in the fact that people voted for Donald Trump to move into the White House. And he says liberals put him there. So our phone lines are really humming, as you could imagine, and we will be with you in just one moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's hop to phone calls. Mary in Milwaukee, hello.
Good morning, or good afternoon, I guess it is. Anyway, I'm a diehard Democrat, and I agree with you 100%. And, what, 7, 8 years ago, the Republican Party had a movement called the Tea Party Movement, and they embraced it. But the Democrats, who had a socialistic progressive movement going, stomped that grassroots movement out like a fire, and it came back to bite them.
Thomas.
Well, that's right. I mean, one of the things about Listen, Liberal is about the history, as I said, the history of the Democratic Party, and it focuses on the Clintons in particular. But one of the things about the Clintons is their deep distaste for the left, for the political left, and for the solutions that you used to identify with the Democratic Party, as sort of Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, Lyndon Johnson tradition. And you think about the opportunity that Democrats had in 2009 when Barack Obama was swept into the White House by that massive popular wave, you know, hundreds of thousands of people coming out to watch him speak. And they expected him to get tough with Wall Street in the sort of way that Franklin Roosevelt had done in the 1930s, and he didn't do it. He propped the banks back up, and there they are today. They're doing just fine. Bonuses are back where they were. And it is the most extraordinary missed opportunity. You know, and we can go down the list of the other things that Obama, you know, the opportunities that he had, you know, that would have nipped this thing in the butt. Well, it never would have gotten to this stage had he taken the opportunities that were before him in those days. But he didn't want to, for reasons that we will, I don't know if we'll ever know the real answer why he didn't do it. But it's not because the Republicans were stopping him. I'm talking about things that he could have done completely on his own, and he did have a Democratic majority back at the start. Can I give you one more example?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, you're in Wisconsin, so it might be particularly meaningful to you. Do you remember why Obama won? This is it's almost ancient history now, but in 2008 he beat Hillary Clinton in the primaries, and the first one is he won the Iowa caucuses, and this was a big deal because Iowa is a very white state. It just went for Trump, as a matter of fact, but he beat Hillary in the Iowa caucuses that year, and his ace in the hole, the way he beat her was by promising to get tough with the agricultural monopolies, you know, that are sort of wrecking small town America and farmers, the family farm. And people really liked that. He never did it. You know, he could still do it to this day. The antitrust laws are on the books. They were passed 100 years ago. He just never did it. You know, he also promised to renegotiate NAFTA, just like Trump has done. He promised that in 2008, and it's completely certainly within his power as president to do that. You can do it unilaterally. He doesn't need Congress to do it. He changed his mind as soon as he became president. So many missed opportunities. You know, after organized labor supported him so strongly in 2008, they came to him with their one demand. You know, their one demand, make it easier to form a labor union in America. It's almost impossible to do now. He realized what that would have done to change the nature of working, the way working class people live. He didn't do it. He just didn't feel like it. You know, and we're living with the consequences of this. He wanted to move to the center and reach out to the Republicans, and you know, they have this whole way of thinking about Democrats have this whole way of thinking about how you operate once you're in D.C. and it involves always blowing off the left, always, right? You know, because those people aren't serious and they have nowhere else to go, and so on and so forth. And look at what just happened.
Well, let's go back to recent history when things changed, and Bill Clinton's attempt to win a second term in the White House. Hillary Clinton's very involved in a secretive fashion in really overhauling healthcare in this country in a more liberal way, in a more thorough way than what we eventually got. People are very upset in Washington. People are upset on the campaign trail when she's out talking to people. They're booing her. It's socialism. It's they don't like her. They don't like the leftist trend of this government. They bring in Dick Morris, who gets her to, you know, have everybody look at the Christmas tree while she's in her green dress and changes her persona because they believe that they can't win again unless they become more centrist. Yeah. And it seems as though, go ahead, Obama feels the same way, that he can't win again unless he becomes centrist. Are you saying that's wrong, that they could have won if they had been much more liberal with ideas?
Yes, it is. I mean, you look at the things that Bill Clinton actually did, and they're all disastrous. On Hillary, you're talking about Hillary care back in the 90s, and this really is, I mean, people don't even remember the particulars of it, but it wasn't single payer. It was very similar to what we eventually got with Obama. You know, it preserved the power of the insurance companies and this sort of thing. It was not a great program, and it was not well done. It was incredibly complicated. It was done in secret. I mean, it had a lot of things wrong with it. Whereas something like Medicare, as you know, is extremely popular to this day. But what really killed Bill Clinton, if you ask me, was NAFTA. I mean, this was the great betrayal when he sort of ran the steamroller over his allies in organized labor. In 1993, that was right out of the box, by the way. That was one of the first things he did as president, and one of the very next things he did was, you know, mass incarceration and bank deregulation. These are all moves to the center, you can say Bill Clinton did get reelected in 1996, and what a great thing that was. But every single one of the things that he did has ended in disaster. Welfare reform, you know, and bank deregulation went on and on and on in his administration. And that's not just, you know, a disaster in electoral terms. That, you know, that's what precipitated the financial crisis. He explicitly got derivative securities, not just deregulated. They made it so the government didn't oversee them in any way. And that was Bill Clinton that did that, got a piece of legislation passed in order to do that. He deregulated telecoms. Mm-hmm. Remember this? Every single one of these was a disaster. And they were all Republican issues, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mary, thanks for the call. Let's go to Brad next. Hi, Brad.
Hi there. After 1988, the Democratic Party realized that they lost three consecutive elections, Reagan twice and then Bush Sr. once. And so they thought, how are we going to compete with the Republicans? How are we going to get the Reagan Democrats back into the fold? And so they took a different tact. They started this new Democratic movement, New Democrats. Bill Clinton was the first president, I believe, of the New Dems, and right before he ran for president in 92. And their strategy was to get the Reagan Democrats back. They'd preach, you know, lowering taxes, keeping taxes low. And then they wanted to compete monetarily with Republicans. And to do that, they thought that they need to suck up to the corporations, so in Wall Street. So that's when you saw the deregulation of banking. You saw a passage of free trade, which the corporations and the Republicans wanted. You saw the Telecommunications Act of 1986. And so they try to become like Republican light, and they become very corporatist. And so since then, you've seen both parties move to the right, both the Democrats and the Republicans. And, you know, if you're running as Republican light against a real Republican, you're going to get beat by the Republicans every time. And, you know, what's frustrating is, you know, that's it's just really frustrating is that the media doesn't tell people how the Democratic Party has changed. It's not the same as it was back in the New Deal era of the 50s, 60s, and 70s when we were so prosperous and the Democratic Party ruled.
Thomas.
Well, you know, I'm doing my best. I mean, that is true. The media doesn't tell that story, but I'm out there all the time as much as I can. This is what Listen Liberal is. It's the very story that the caller was describing. It is that story. I would put it in slightly different terms, which is that the Democrats decided in the early 70s, actually, to remove organized labor from its position of its structural position within the Democratic Party. And to become this different thing, and they did it deliberately, they did it openly, and they decided to reach out to a different group, the affluent white collar professionals that I was talking about before, and the rest is history, as they say. And Bill Clinton was a kind of exemplar of that move. And so, yes, they go to Wall Street and they go to Big Pharma and they go to Silicon Valley for the money, but they also do it out of this kind of professional class idealism. They look at Wall Street and they say that's the creative class. Have you guys heard this term, by the way, creative class? This is one of their favorite things that they love to talk about. The creative class, they're writing these, they're doing financial innovation. They're writing these really innovative derivative securities on Wall Street. So those are our people, they say. And so there's this kind of idealistic identification. You know, when Hillary spoke to Goldman Sachs and did all those speeches, which, by the way, really hurt her, I think.
I think so, too.
When she did all that, that wasn't just for the money. I mean, of course, it was in part for the money, but it's also because that's who she is. She really has. I describe a Clinton Foundation event that I go to in Listen Liberal, where Hillary is talking about, microlending and stuff like this. This is her idea of how you help the poor. You give them loans. You hook them up to Citibank. You know, this is. She thinks that Wall Street is not just rich. But it's a place of great idealism. It's helping out the poor of the world. It's on a civilizing mission around the world. They really think this. By the way, I want to give you my bright side argument about Donald Trump, because there is, I mean, the caller reminded me of this. There is something kind of awesome about the Trump victory. I mean, I'm very sad about it, and I think it'll be disastrous for our country and possibly for the world. But look at what this guy did. In 1 year, he destroyed the establishment wings of both parties, and he ended two political dynasties, mm-hmm. the Bushes and the Clintons. And that's, you know, in Jeffersonian terms, in Democratic terms, that is a great thing. And he also proved along the way that anything is possible. I mean, Hillary outraised this guy. She had so much more funding than him. You know, even though he is he's very wealthy himself, she was spending money like crazy, and she still lost. And as the caller said, all these years, the centrist Democrats have told us, people like me, that we have to sit down and shut up because in order to beat the Republicans, you have to raise them dollar for dollar. You have to equal their fundraising dollar for dollar. And if you don't do that, you're lost. And the only way to do that is to become friends with Wall Street, become friends with Big Pharma, and become friends with the billionaire community. And Hillary, she followed that strategy right to the end. And Trump beat her.
He destroyed two political dynasties, but he also has so deeply hurt people who are suffering now. Women, Hispanics,
yeah.
Muslims,
oh, yeah.
Disabled people.
It's not going to be a good thing. What I mean is that he has cleared the decks in Washington,
yes,
D.C.,
yeah,
and
right.
anything is
right.
possible here. Anything could, is possible now.
Could he, do you think, Thomas, have won the election if he had not included all that horrible, distasteful, misogynistic, racist, xenophobic rhetoric? If he had just concentrated on the economy and working people...
He would have probably done a lot better. You
think so?
No, Trump has. He's doing the populist thing. But he's doing it for real. It's not, you know, for years Republicans have posed as populists, as these kind of culture war populists, but he's actually offering people something real on the trade deals in particular, but in some other ways as well. And this is new. I think he hurt himself. Of course he hurt himself with his remarks about women and about Muslims. I mean, the lowest point of his campaign was when he mocked that family at the Democratic Convention whose son was killed in Iraq. That was so reprehensible when he did that. And he bounced back from that, which is, that's the crazy thing. The guy came back from that and the rest is history. But no, there's no question in my mind but that hurt him. That hurt him badly. I think a real politician would have known not to do that stuff and would have probably done a lot better than he did.
Troy sends this email. To me, it was obvious that the history books were likely not to record 230 years of white males as presidents, experiment with the first black male, and follow that with the first female. Right or wrong, subliminally, that's simply too much change too fast. Bernie Sanders would have won this hands down. Though I voted for Hillary, I blame her for thinking that she can't lose and not stepping aside.
Well, that's right. She, look, she tried her best. At the end of the day, I do blame Hillary because she was the leader and she lost, and there has to be accountability, and people have to take responsibility for what they did. And she lost an easily winnable election, no question in my mind. And I also agree with your listener that Bernie Sanders probably would have won this thing. As I mentioned earlier, I think any number of Democrats would have won this thing. But Hillary was uniquely vulnerable to Trump's attack on the trade issue, uniquely vulnerable because of her husband's history with NAFTA, her own history in the U.S. Senate, her time as Secretary of State. She was wide open.
Brad, thanks for the call. Let's go to Joe in Green Bay. Hi, Joe.
Hello. Thank you. I've been waiting for a week and a half here for somebody to talk about this. If you go back to Hillary when Bill first got elected, she said stuff like, "Do you expect me to sit and bake cookies? Boy, that's going to win you a lot of votes in Kansas." She also said, "Well, hey, wait a minute. You're getting two for the price of one."
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a diehard Democrat, and I said, "No, you run for nothing." And then you have the audacity to talk about a meritocracy.
Yep.
Wait a minute. Who in the world do you think you are?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
She runs for office. She goes to a place where she knows she can win, not back to Arkansas where she was, where they lived for God knows how long. She just assumed that this is so easy for me, and she came across as the biggest elitist, and that is just not going to win you votes outside the big cities.
Thanks, Joe, for your call.
Yeah,
Thomas.
That's exactly right. But you got to remember what kind of elite. I mean, there's more than one elite in America. The elite that Hillary represents is a sort of professional class elite. You know, she went to Yale Law School. She was a very accomplished lawyer. By the way, it didn't help that the New York Times kept running these stories about what a great lawyer she was back in the day, you know, and how brilliant she is and what a great resume she has and how everyone in Washington knows her. By the way, and it's all true, she is a very, very smart person. She's extremely competent. But to craft that into an entire political philosophy, oh my God, it is to get the moment so incredibly wrong. And by the way, Democrats do this all the time. Meritocracy is what they are all about. A meritocracy in which it's all defined by educational accomplishment, right? So the idea is that everybody gets what they deserve in life, and what they deserve is defined by how they did in school. Right, or how they did in their professional career, you know, with their advanced degrees. And so, and Hillary really was the crowning glory of that system, you know, the ultra-competent. Democrats have a long history, by the way, of they love this kind of figure, the sort of the passionless but very accomplished technocrat. You think of Michael Dukakis, you think of Jimmy Carter, you think of Al Gore, John Kerry. I mean, even Obama has that sort of wonk side to him. He also has a very passionate side that he can switch on and, you know, and is very persuasive, I think, to a lot of people. But Hillary was that kind of person. But what makes that philosophy so ugly is two things. First of all, what the caller mentioned, that we know it's not true. she didn't get to where she is on the dent of her own hard work and genius. You know, she was the wife of the former president. And, you know, that's... And second of all, meritocracy is a... In a situation like what we have right now where people, working class people's lives are falling apart, and you say to them, you know, it's your own fault because you didn't go to college, or you didn't, maybe you did go to college, but you didn't go to a good college, or you didn't study the right subject, you didn't study a STEM subject, you foolishly went and studied, I don't know, comparative literature or something like that. You know, that is, to just keep pushing the blame back on people for their own situation when it is obviously not their own fault. That is not a winner, you know, and that's by the way, exact Democrats, the Democrats that I know and love in the old days were exactly the opposite of that. They understood that things like unemployment, the modern economy, it was out of our control. It wasn't up to individuals. You know, a lot of things are up to individuals, but in a lot of ways we are all at the mercy of forces beyond our control. We all know that, you know, and then to say to these people, it's all your own fault. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, in some ways, when you were talking about that, she is also a person of her time. She hitched her wagon to his star because we're talking about the early 1970s. Her star, her political star, wasn't available to her at that time because she was a woman in America in the 1970s. I mean, the same, if we had lived in a society where everybody was equal, and if you were African American, you could easily run. If you were a woman, you could easily run. Part of that happened to her trajectory because of being female, don't you think?
Oh, of course. And look, every exception, I grant every exception. I don't want to be hard on Hillary Clinton or mean to Hillary Clinton. She is a very talented person, and she tried hard. She really worked hard. And, you know, I was proud of her in the debates when Trump was, like, threatening.
She was good in the debates. Yeah.
I was proud of that she didn't cower or buckle or show any kind of fear. And she was so smart. You know, I was very proud of her. But look, everything I just described, it's devastating. You know, this is not how you run the party of the people. This is not how you run the party of Franklin Roosevelt.
Mm. More phone calls in a moment. Thomas Frank is our guest this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter @KDunnShow. Thomas has been with us before on his latest book, and we are talking, of course, about how Donald Trump got elected and how flawed Hillary Clinton was as a candidate. His latest book is Listen, Liberal, or Whatever Happened to the Party of the People. He's also the author of What's the Matter with Kansas. We'll take more of your phone calls in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Harvey is our next caller in Rice Lake. Hi, Harvey.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Sure.
Mr. Frank, I basically agree with everything you're saying. But I don't think that Mr. Trump changed minds, changed Democratic voters' minds so much as Mrs. Clinton, unfortunately, did not attract traditional Democratic voters. The last four presidential elections, last three. Mr. Obama got almost 70 million votes, and then he got 66, and Mrs. Clinton basically got 60. So she was 10 million down from 2008 and 6 million down. And in those same elections, the Republican, whether it was McCain or Romney or now Trump, they all got 60 million. So, I mean, it just seems to me that the Democratic people, Democratic voters, were turned off and didn't come out.
There's no question about that. That is, and you look at the margins in a lot of these states. Look at the margin in Wisconsin. It's very narrow.
Right.
You know, a small change in turnout would have made everything go the other direction. Well, look, this is a problem when you nominate someone who is deeply unpopular and who's not particularly inspiring. It's also a problem of myopia, where the people who are in charge of the Democratic Party and in charge of the, you know, her media cheerleading section, they all think she's really inspiring. I mean, just go back and look at the New York Times op-eds supporting her. They thought she was the most inspiring figure they've ever seen. And they can't understand how other people don't agree with them, you know. They just can't figure that out. But this is a chronic problem in Washington, you know, the people believing their own propaganda, you know, living in Washington, D.C., which is in New York City, very, very prosperous places, and in a place like San Francisco. And these are all places, by the way, dominated by the very social class that I was describing to you earlier, the creative class, the you know, white-collar professional class. They see Hillary as one of their own. Unfortunately, those people by themselves are not enough to win any election anywhere. They're not a large enough percentage of the population. At the end of the day, you know, democracy is about the common people.
Thanks so much, Harvey, for your call. Sherry in Waukesha, hi.
Hi, Gary, actually.
Gary. Hi, Gary.
I'm sorry. No, I probably didn't enunciate good enough. Just very quickly, I feel vindicated by hearing his comments about Joe Biden. I remember calling either you or Joy in the morning, April or May, and I said, I'm flabbergasted as why Joe Biden hasn't even been mentioned as a candidate, being a vice president. Usually they throw their hat in the ring, and back then nobody knew, and they said, well, we think that he doesn't want the position. And then very quickly, I wonder if being more liberal, if the Democrats will ever get elected again, because here in Wisconsin, for instance, we have a very strong talk radio conservative all over the state, almost 24 hours a day. And I have friends of mine that are actually disabled and can't work, and they're benefiting from programs. And yet they elected Scott Walker. These friends of mine and acquaintances, they elected Scott Walker, saying they wanted him to take things away from people, even though these people were getting the same thing. And they were saying the same thing for Trump when we were talking about getting elected. They wanted to take things away from people to help the country get better, although as long as it didn't get taken away from themselves. So I don't know if going more liberal, if it'll ever benefit the Democrats again. But thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the call.
That is a bleak outlook, but that's the thesis of what's the matter with Kansas, or not the thesis, it's the sort of story of what's the matter with Kansas, and now listen liberal. I mean, it's exactly as the caller described. I mean, what can I say about the Joe Biden story? There was a very interesting bit of journalism, really an excellent piece of journalism in Politico magazine here in Washington, where it described the way Barack Obama did everything in his power to make Hillary Clinton the candidate, which is sort of surprising on its face, because they did not get along with each other back in 2008. But over the years, Obama decided that Hillary should be his successor. She was his hand-picked successor. And he personally, the story describes how Obama personally talked Biden out of running. You know, Biden it was an obvious candidate, and does have a very blue-collar way of speaking, and has a sort of a rapport with the kind of voters that just went for Trump. He probably would have wiped the floor with Trump. But Obama talked him out of it, and then did everything in his power to make sure that Hillary was the candidate, that she beat Bernie Sanders.
But wait a second. Joe Biden's son died, too. That took the heart out of him.
That's right. No, that's right. But the man still apparently was considering running, and Obama really had to work on him to persuade him not to do it.
Thanks very much for the call, Gary. Let's go to Leslie in Preston, Minnesota. Hi, Leslie.
Hi. This guest is just wonderful. I'm sympathetic to everybody that's feeling pain, but I like it. Instead of crying in their soup, you're coming up with reasons why it might have been not all these terrible racist people out here. There are so many other reasons, but you're very intuitive, guest. But the thing that I think, and I tried to call this in several times, and Kathleen, it just seemed like you just blew me off, like, that's not right.
Well, we're almost out of time. I'm not blowing you off.
It was Ferguson. It was definitely Ferguson that changed the tide on a lot of people. How Obama handled Ferguson and let people just pillage and steal and burn, that turned so many people off.
Well, I I think I disagree on that, but it's not a subject that I really looked into at all. But I think Obama, you know, police brutality is a scary thing. I mean, Ferguson was misplayed in all sorts of different ways, but at the end of the day, police brutality and the militarized presence there, I think, frightened a lot of people. It frightened me, anyway. But anyhow, now we're in for, you know, 4 years of that stuff. Can I just say what Democrats here in Washington...
10 seconds. We got 10 seconds.
I mean, there's civil war in the Democratic Party. And
I'm sure.
Yeah, counting on Trump to blow it. That's their strategy, and so we shall see.
Yeah, we have a long way to go until we understand what it's like to be another person on so many levels. Thank you, Thomas. Thomas Frank, our guest, his latest book is Listen Liberal, or Whatever Happened to the Party of the People. Thanks very, very much to all of you who called in. Thanks to Scotty Myers producing the show, KP Whaley for on-air production. Thank you for listening. News is coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return.